Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for over 43 years now. Every Sunday night at around 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and teach each other, learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you want to reach me via email, that would be either for what we used to call mailbag questions that normally are asked during the technical net, but if you can't get to the repeater, then you can email me, and if it looks interesting, we can read the email and discuss it, and then you can listen to either the audio stream on the internet or an archived copy of the technical net that's available at a website that I'll mention in a little while. Or if you have a topic that you're an expert in or close to an expert that's in the news and you want to share your expertise with us, you can email me and ask, and we'll give you time for that. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them. They're as rare as hen's teeth, and they're a wonderful opportunity to brush up on aspects of science and technology. Or if you want me to just tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at some NASA or space-related story, of course, you can directly email him. He's available at spacenetreport@gmail.com. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Throughout the week, I cut and paste interesting articles that I've seen or YouTubes or fun stuff, and I put it on a page, and I publish it out there into the internet, and you can get to it by just typing into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page, and it's available 24/7, and I keep it up for years and years and years. If you want to try our chat room, sometimes it's very quiet, sometimes it's a little noisy. You know, it's different on different Sundays, but if you want to get to it, you just have to type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And, of course, I mentioned that we stream this onto the internet. If you type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, it'll give you the stream of the technical net, and I keep the feed live for most of the week, so that if you want to know what's going on in Glen Oaks, you can use the same technet.ac2gs.com on your browser and just listen into Glen Oaks. I like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. That's where you get the archive copies of the technical net. It's called amateurradio.tv, and he has archives that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have moved out of the area or unfortunately become silent keys through the years. Their wisdom remains on those audio files for anyone to listen to. Let me drop for a second, and I will tell you what we got planned. It's going to be a standard operating technical net. I have a couple of things, a short little story to tell you at the top of it. Then we'll get to questions, topics, and comments of a technical nature. I hope the first few will be amateur radio related, but we are always open to discussing any aspects of science and technology as best as I can. And hopefully I'll, at the very least, provide some reference material or a few comments. That should take us to about 10:15. Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report at that time, and that will take us to about 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well. If the laws of physics continue to work the way they're supposed to, if my shack works, my computer works, the repeater works, and the world works, every so often I have been known to fall off of the All-Star link that I'm operating through right now. So if all of a sudden I seem to be unresponsive, give me about 15, 30 seconds to reestablish the All-Star link. We'll see how things go. Anyway, that's it. That's what we got planned. So I'll let it drop, and then I'll get into my first topic that I just wanted to tell people about. No doubt some of you are familiar with these things that we call computers, especially Microsoft's operating system, Windows, which is the bane of our existence. The most common operating system, although Linux is still growing. Windows has a new iteration. In the old days, Windows would have semi-major upgrades twice a year. They would designate it by calling, you know, the first half would be for the year 2023, it would be called 23H1 for the first half and H2 for the second half. This year, Microsoft thought that they were going to do something a little different, so they didn't issue a 24H1. They kept on updating the 23H2 version with some security issues and otherwise, and held off 24H2 until just a couple of months ago. And some people were kind of talking about it as though it was Windows 12 instead of Windows 11, but for whatever reason, Microsoft likes to stick at Microsoft 11 for the time being. So its designation, and you can Google it, is 24H2. I gave them a couple of months to get the mess out of it, because usually initially these upgrades are messy. And then I tried it on two of my computers unsuccessfully. Let me drop for a sec. On one of my lesser computers, it just screwed up the taskbar. My taskbar has a lot of icons on it, and so I set it to small. And for some odd reason, the update, when it took, it turned it into large and then made it hidden. So it would keep rolling down to the base, and very few of the icons would show up because I have more icons than a large icon taskbar will show on one screen. So I rolled it back. I guess I was feeling experimental. I tried it on my main desktop, which I am operating today, which is how I get into AllStar. And unfortunately, it was a blooming disaster. Apparently, 24H2 has sometimes problems with USB audio drivers. And so, of course, I have two signal link boxes connected to this computer, and both of them went bye-bye. I couldn't get any signal out, and it couldn't even really recognize what it was. It reset its label, and even if I used the reset label, it wouldn't actually pass any audio signal. I contacted the manufacturer. He said, you know, it's not my fault, it's Microsoft's fault, and they have to fix the drivers. So I rolled that back as well. So 0 out of 2. So moral of the story is maybe 24H2 isn't quite ready for prime time. If you've been considering giving it a fling, I would suggest you fling that fling and wait for a couple more months until they get USB audio drivers quite right and a few other little problems they seem to have with the new version. Anyway, anyone have any comments about good old 24H2? Gee, I am astounded by the apparent apathy. Maybe you're not aware of 24H2. Maybe 24H2 was kinder to you than it was to me. I tend to run a lot of different things, so there's a lot of possibilities for incompatibilities going on here. So anyway, if no one wants to chat about computers, and particularly 24H2 and the new version of Windows 11 that Microsoft has cursed us with, then I guess we will go to the next segment, which is the questions, comments, and topics for discussion. If anyone has any of those, please hit that push to talk, give me your call sign, tell me what's the nature of it. Is it a question, comment, topic? Is it ham-related? Is it not ham-related? And we will put you on the list for tonight.
November HK, November 2, Zoom, Charlie John, ham-related questions.
Wes and John recognize. Anyone else want to put their name down? Okay, perhaps there'll be a few more people as time goes on. John, what's your question tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Good evening, Ned. Seems I got the floor, huh? I was at a ham radio breakfast, and nobody was talking about. Made a statement that seemed rational, but, you know, I didn't, just found it very interesting. I wanted to run it by you. What he said was this. We were discussing feed line and residents in feed line, and he said, you know, you can take three feed lines and connect them together and put them, you know, into the one SO239. And when you transmit, your transceiver will find and follow the line with the most perfect match, which sounded reasonable, but was, you know, something I didn't think of. Just wanted to run that by you first and see if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, John. Yeah, I totally agree with him. And matter of fact, I used that principle many years on my roof. I had fan dipoles, which work exactly like that. Fan dipoles, it's a little bit more efficient. You don't necessarily need to have the transmission lines set to separate antennas. You could actually get a transmission line up above your roof and then put a number of parallel dipoles that are cut to different lengths. And the length that is nominally close to 50 ohms of impedance, because it's at resonance, will exchange energy. As good old Andy WA2CBL once said in his Andy's Corner, the whole point of matching impedances is it maximizes energy transfer. So that's the very underlying nature of how fan dipoles work to this day. So what he said was quite correct.
Okay, and to make sure I situated it right, he said that if you connected the three transmission lines together and then transmitted into them, that the power would find the most resonant line, follow that, and go to the antenna. Now, what you stated, I want to make sure I understood, and forgive me, I'm just not, I don't recall the fan dipole schematic in my mind at the moment, but you just said something interesting. I believe you said if you ran a transmission line through the roof and put three dipoles in parallel, that the transmitter, the transmitting power, would go to the most resonant dipole. So I'm assuming now we're sort of talking in reverse, where all three antennas are connected to this one transmission line. Am I following you correctly?
Yes.
Very good, and thank you for that different take on it, because it's always interesting to look at things from a different angle, and it makes it even more interesting. Very nice, very nice. I have another question for you, since nobody chimed in as of yet. In our previous discussions, and excuse me, I was absent here for a few weeks. My computer went at home, and I purchased a new one, and now, you know, that's sort of cool. What you're talking about, the microphone isn't being recognized by the computer and all this, so I haven't been able to get on. But when we left off, I was picking your brain on a full-wave dipole, and I did a little more reading on it, and this is the conclusion I came to, and I'd like to hear your assessment, if you you think I'm correct in this or not, or any critiques, but from rereading this stuff, because I just find it very interesting, that the full-wave dipole, the wave pattern, which gives you the gain in a direction, we went over that, sort of doesn't increase the power, but it gives you more power and directivity. And that pattern almost seems to me to be that, when I'm reading about this in these books, a theoretical pattern. And even if it's not, to get that pattern almost seems to be elusive. And this is my thinking on it, because we discussed it. To get it to match, you would have to feed a full-wave dipole roughly about 25-30% from one end. And then I would think now you're starting the wave pattern from a completely different point on the antenna than what is shown in these diagrams in like the ARRO handbook. And so I am coming to the conclusion that that's a ideal wave pattern that, if you could match it at the center, it could be achieved, but that doesn't seem to be possible. What are your thoughts on my points?
Okay, AC2GS, by the way. I agree with you on that as well. The problem is that a lot of times, especially in books, they will give you the ideal radiation pattern based on antenna theory and antenna software simulations. They're always generated in the perfect case of free space, like, you know, 1,200 miles above Earth. So that's where you get those ideal, or very, very close to those ideal types of radiation patterns. Anytime you bring it anywhere near Earth to a ground potential, you're going to distort things, you're going to get absorptions, you're going to get reflections. And I did an article for the Limark newsletter at one point where I just took a generic half-wave center-fed dipole and moved it around in space close to the Earth. If you take it very close to the ground, a lot of the radiation pattern distorts is going straight up, and that's a near vertical incident sky wave. Very good for local communication. If you're sitting beside two hills and you want to reach people on those hills and beyond, that's a very good way of doing it. If you want to talk to another country, it's a terrible way, because you would want it to be at least about a half of a wavelength above the ground, where a good portion of the radiation will skip into the sky and get into the ionosphere and refract across the world. So, these are idealizations based on a theoretical construct that has to do with the nebulous concept of an antenna just in free space, somewhere between here and the moon.
Okay, very interesting, Roy. Thank you. I could continue with some other questions, but I don't want to take over here and use my slot, so I'll hand it back to the net. If nobody else joins in, I'll get back with you, and I'll be on the side. HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie, AC2GS.
Okay, that's very kind of you, John. Well, anyone want to take John's offer? Is there anyone out there who hasn't checked into the technical net tonight that has a question or a comment or a topic for discussion that they'd like to, present to the technical net? Okay, there's a gentleman.
Kilo Delta 2. Sierra Tango Echo, Terry, Livingston, New Jersey. And just chiming in, saying I'm listening. And I was wondering where your antennas are located, because I can't make it on the HT, so I'm on Echolink right now. And then I have a follow-up question. KD2XTE.
Okay, Terry. I have a couple of antennas remaining. A lot of them got blown down in the wind a couple of years ago, unfortunately. And I'm having trouble kind of getting together anyone to assist me because roofs are difficult things for some people to get to. And I really hate ladders. Anyway, I have a two-family private house. So I have most of my antennas used to stay there. I have a 10-meter stereo 5/8 wave on a tripod on one corner of my roof. I used to have a Rhone extendable pole that was the framework for the fan dipole that I mentioned earlier to John. And I also have a 2-meter Yagi pointed at a repeater that I frequent. And I also have a GP3 Comet antenna on my laundry pole. We used to, in the good old days, used to hang laundry on it. People thankfully haven't done that for years and years, but it's a nice platform. It got put up 50 years ago, and it has my GP3. So that's where my antennas are right now.
I'm sorry, I should have been more specific. I was wondering where the antenna for the repeater that we're on now, W2VL, I wonder where that antenna is. KD2STE.
Oh, okay. I'm not really sure. I'll kind of ask the audience. Sometimes Lou himself is listening in. He's part of the repeater crew. There are other repeater technical committee members that sometimes listen in. My understanding is it's on the Nassau, between the Queens Nassau border, I think, into Nassau. But if anyone wants to give me a more particular location, feel free.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, they're located in the North Shore Towers. It's a complex of three tall buildings. Oh, yeah. They got to be 27 stories high. I'm not sure. But they're pretty tall. Right on the Nassau-Queens border. And if you look on the map, it's... there's a Long Island Jewish Hospital, and it's like a stone's throw away from there. That would be the easiest way to locate it. But yeah, there's three buildings there, and they use one of those three buildings for all kinds of antennas, including amateur radio. Back to you.
Thank you, Paul. So I hope that answers your question, Terry.
Yes, I'm very familiar with the North Shore Towers. As a youngster in my 20s, I was passing those buildings. I don't know if it's on the LIE or the Northern State. I forgot. I lived in Queens, and I used to go to discos in Great Neck. I can't remember the name of it right now. Cloth Mathers, something like that. I'm talking 50 years ago. Anyway, from my base, which is a mobile with a box converter, convert the 115 volts into 12.5 DC, and a magnet map on a on a sheet, a cookie sheet, in my attic. So with that little mechanism, I was able to get into this repeater from RF. No problem. And I was surprised because I got out to Long Island like that. And here I am in 70 feet above sea level in low town Somerset, New Jersey. Okay, and this is KD2-STE.
Okay, Terry. Well, you know, I mean, I think I'm trying to think of people located in New Jersey who talk on the repeater. Not that many. We had one gentleman who unfortunately has since become a silent key, and I think for the most part he was communicating when he was mobile, so he may not have been in New Jersey when he was actually talking on the repeater. I mean, we have a wonderful ham, John, KD2BD, who hangs out in our chat room, who is very smart about amateur radio and such, and he's in New Jersey. And I don't think he could get into the repeater, so that's why he's in the chat room. So, you know, you're not the only person in New Jersey who would really love to be able to reach the repeater.
Roger. Perhaps you know my cousin, W2 UFO. He moved to North Carolina. My cousin Mark. This is
KD2-STE. Well, offhand, I do not recall. I know another UFO, but I think he's an N2 UFO.
Oh, it's not W2, it's N2. Oh, I knew the UFO because his father, my uncle, during the war, he worked... radio. He was a sergeant, I think. My Uncle Dave. Where did he work? Right near Floyd Bennett Field. That's what they had it. My Uncle Dave was Floyd Bennett Field. He was actually the UFO. And when he passed at 92 years old a couple of years ago, call sign. So this is Terry in Livingston or Somerset, wherever. I'm listed as Livingston, but tonight I'm in Somerset, New Jersey. Maybe that's why there's a lot of flatlands here. That's why maybe I can get it from the RF side. KD2-STE, listening.
Okay, very good, Terry. No, I didn't. I don't think I ever spoke to Mark. I pulled up his QRZ page. Dapper gentleman with a cowboy hat. But I don't think so. Again, I know another person. It's not N2 UFO. I forget offhand. I remember his call sign ends with UFO because that's a very memorable suffix. You know, he has a QRZ page with a bunch of skulls on it. I don't know, whatever reason, and aliens, of course. I guess we answered your question for tonight, Terry.
Yes, yes, very good, very good. All right, I'll be listening for a little bit, and then I'll be going on to my next event. Nice making your acquaintance. Talk to you again soon, I'm sure. This is Terry from Somerset, New Jersey. Kilo, Delta, 2, Sierra, Tango, Echo.
Very good. 73, Terry. Have a great day. Enjoy your turkey, if that's what you're having for Thanksgiving. Stay safe and be well. And come back and, you know, if you ever have any other questions or comments or topics that you'd like to discuss, we're here every Sunday night. This this is AC2GS. There's someone who's trying, I think, to get across something. Unfortunately, you're about 97% noise, so I can't hear any of the words. You may have been the same person who had the same problem a couple of weeks ago, so I don't know what to tell you. If you could put more power into your transmitter, if you can do something different with the antenna, if the antenna's inside, if you could move the antenna at least to the window, or even better yet, outside. Or there's always EchoLink is available, as Terry demonstrated. You know, it has some little annoyances that people who quick key can kind of keep you out of the conversation, unfortunately, but we try not to have that happen. So if you're out there and there's anything that you can do to improve your signal, try again.
This is KD2SEV, Dan in Buffalo. I have a question relative to EchoLink. I don't think it's a serious question, but it has to do with the small letter R that is after some of the usernames, and it's not after all of them, but I can't figure out what that little R is. I know the capital R is for a repeater, but I don't know what the little R is. Back to you.
What's your first name, sir? Okay, I looked it up. Daniel. Daniel, I'm a little confused. Two is like Limark's designation. If you look for a station, it says it's W2VL-R. Is that the R you're talking about? What was that, Wesley?
He was still in transmit mode. He didn't push to listen.
I don't know how you can kind of tell that. Once again, Daniel, if you're out there, please, you know, check your settings and hit the little microphone and talk. Yes, Chet?
Back in the old days, when we were on repeaters back in the 80s, that was the designation, the R, of a repeater station, obviously. So every repeater station, every station license to be a repeater automatically would get slash R to show stations that that's a repeater station. That's what that was about. They dropped that at a later time.
Yeah, that's the way it was long ago. As far as I'm aware, the only R is the R in the node station name, which designates there's a difference between you know, personal EchoLink nodes and repeater EchoLink nodes. You know, one is considered kind of a client and has a lot less capability. If you're running an EchoLink from a repeater, you need to actually go into server mode because that opens a lot more options. Client mode just kind of gives you an input and an output, and that's it. For a repeater, you need to put the radio input and the radio output, and then it has a parallel set of connections for the net control operator to get into the EchoLink node without screwing up the repeater setting. So that designation, both dash R and dash L, are for EchoLink nodes with server designations that have a lot more adjustability than the generic client version that doesn't have the dash R or dash L.
This is Dan in Buffalo, KD2SPV. The R that I'm referring to is if you go to users on the computer, if you go to a user tab and bring up users, so
some of them will have a small case R, not a dash R, not a dash L, but a lowercase R at the end. And I haven't figured out what it is. I think it might be refresh, but I just don't know. Back to you.
Okay, I don't have a user setting in my window. There's alarms, there's new, there's favorites, there's recent, and there's search results.
Go to your node types. You should have a list with conference, links, repeaters, and users.
Oh, okay, I'm there. I just get call signs. I don't get any kind of... Let me see if I can widen the window, because it's a little bit shortened. Okay, I see what you're talking about. There's all kinds of interesting little designations there in parentheses. Not quite sure. My guesstimate would be since this particular window doesn't have the dash R setting, that it's probably just another way to indicate that it's a repeater. Could be wrong. Sometimes that particular node is a conference node, and it tells you how many people, what the maximum and what the present occupation in the conference room would be. So I think it's just redundant information, because I don't see any designation for the dash R on any of the stations.
You would need to go up on your nodes. If you go to conferences, you'll see the asterisk. If you go to links, you'll see the dash L. If you go to repeaters, you'll see the dash R. I just don't know what that little R is after users. That's the only place it is. Back to you.
Okay. Well, if that's not the case, then it's a mystery to me. I haven't really plumbed the depths of Echolink that much. There are guys out there that randomly connect to unknown people throughout the world. I've had cases where, unfortunately, I had my Echolink open, but I was not even in the shack. And I would come back and see text messages from people who tried to make contact. So that's a curious question. Maybe I'll just email the guys who do Echolink and ask them if there's anything particularly special about these designations. If anyone else has any better ideas of what that small R means, please feel free.
Hey, C2PO.
Yeah, Jeff?
I don't know. My suggestion would be just connect to one of those nodes the same way people tried to connect to you and ask them what's up.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they know why the small R is there. You know, Echolink kind of probably places that due to some classification, which may or may not be known by the people who possess it.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Absolutely. The simplest way to, what is it, the shortest distance between two lines? You go straight to the water hole, you might get a drink.
Yeah, and the guys who run Echolink are kind of stand-up guys. You know, if you ever, God forbid, if you ever have a frequency allocation problem, lots of luck, because those guys, I think, meet every third year in a closet someplace. But the Echolink, I've emailed them a couple of questions, and they've kind of emailed me a couple of things to stop doing. I never quite knew, but they really do not like someone using the same ISP IP address to run two Echolink nodes. I guess it confuses their servers or something. So I made it a point of when I do it, I place it behind a VPN so it doesn't have the same IP address So, yeah, I think if I email them in a couple of days, they'll probably email me back a salient answer. So I would suggest, Dan, if you want, stay tuned next Sunday, and hopefully I'll be able to answer the question.
Thank you for checking it out. I'm having a little problem because I've got you both on my computer and my telephone, and I can do both talk and listen on my phone, but my computer I can only listen. For some reason, my microphone has gone south or somewhere, and I've got to check a setting somewhere. But I will try and check back in next Sunday. I'm going to be down in Providence, but I'll try and check in from there on Echolink and see what you can find out. I appreciate your looking into it. This is Dan, KD2SPV 73.
73, Dan. I'm sure, they'll respond by the middle of the week, even though, Thanksgiving is probably not the greatest time to query people. I think I mentioned earlier that when I tried to upgrade my Windows and it screwed up my signal link from Tigertronic, I emailed them kind of, what the heck is this, and is there a fix? And I was surprised to find on a Saturday night that, 10 o'clock at night, they answered emails. And then they answered it a few more times today about stuff. So a lot of these small organizations are very well run. So I expect to get some kind of an answer. It's probably going to be something that, after they tell me, will seem to be extremely obvious. This is AC2GS.
Thank you for your help, and wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. I'll tune in next Sunday and see what happens. You, 73.
Okay, very good, Dan. Again, there was a gentleman in the background trying to get in, and I don't know if it's the same guy or a different guy, but he was sort of stepped on. So if you try to get the TechNet's attention, please try again. Okay, if you tried, all it was a little bit of noise. There wasn't any audio. Give it one more try, and then we'll move on. Oh, well. Like I said before, there's always Echolink. It's a nice thing to have in your back pocket just in case. Once again, I'm AC2GS. This is the Limark Technical Net. Anyone has any questions or comments or technical topics tonight, please hit that push to talk and introduce yourself.
This is WA2VDH with just a comment.
K2VDH
with a comment and a problem. Okay, there was another station in there. Do I have it right?
Yeah, John, you go first, and the gentleman, I couldn't make out his entire call sign, but it ends in VW, we'll go after you.
Okay, fine. Just a quick comment about the fan dipole. Actually, in the meantime, I did look in the ARRL antenna book about fan dipoles. That concept of taking multiple band antennas and the power only goes into the antenna that's resonant, it has a little caveat on the side. The assumption is that the non-resonant antennas are exhibiting such high impedance that their parallel combination with the resonant antenna doesn't change things much. So I think the assumption is that the antennas in this fan dipole are on different bands. They're not on the same band, closely spaced or frequency-wise. They're on different bands, like 80, 40, and 20, so that the non-resonant one, its impedance is so high that its parallel combination effect is negligible. So that was just my comment. Go ahead.
Casey to Bill.
Yes, Jeff?
Oh, yeah, sorry, Roy. I also wanted to comment on that, and that was my comment was going to be a more generalized, essentially, comment based on what the previous station said. And the question was theoretical, that if you had a perfectly matched antenna and you also had a 50 ohm resistor in parallel as one of the legs of the fan dipole, would you be splitting power down that antenna plus the 50 ohm resistor, you know, each band that you used, QSL?
I would think so. I mean, the point that I made earlier was that it would go down the 50 ohm impedance because that theoretically would be a resonant antenna. You know, not that anyone is putting up a 50 ohm non-inductive load as a choice for the RF to go. And John is right. You know, in the ham bands, the bands are different enough that the impedances at a given band for legs of a dipole that are cut to be resonant for the other ham bands is a significantly different impedance.
HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, Zulu Charlie.
Yeah, Roy, since we're going, we're touching on this impedance about networks, I fully understand the reason for impedance matching, for, you know, maximum power transfer, and I understand how to do it. I really always, I never quite got an explanation that satisfied me as to why. Why is there so much of a, or why is there a power loss when there is not an impedance match? I played with this just using the simple almost law going back and forth. I didn't see, you know, any direct answer to it. And I also played it in my mind with the whole, you know, theory of physically with the water holes, you know, with the voltage and the current and the resistance when you squeeze the hose, and then think of it going into another hose with a, you know, a different size, etc. Any comment on that? That might clear that up a little, just so it's more intuitive and hands-on.
Yeah, you got to basically pick your analogies for the cases. Hydraulics, I think I mentioned to Wes last week that hydraulics can only take you so far. Hydraulics is reasonably good for direct currents. When you start to deal with alternating currents, hydraulics doesn't really help you much. And that's probably, and also Ohm's law without the impedance, a portion of it is a problem as well, because that's a DC current phenomenon. So I tend to prefer, and some people really apparently don't like it, to use the analogy of visible electromagnetic rays, light. The impedance occurs in a dielectric. So in the same case of the impedance based on the dielectric that produces the transmission line, glass has an impedance. So we call it a refractive index. So what happens is if the air and a substance has the same refractive index, means really the same impedance, the light goes right through. If you change one of those to a different refractive index / impedance, it reflects back partially. The more the difference in the impedance, the more the reflection of the electromagnetic wave occurs. So that's what's really ultimately happening at the antenna, and there'll be a few people who want to use different analogies and explain it in a different way. But that works best for me, that when you have a mismatch, it's not like it heats up and uses up the energy. It reflects it back into the transmission line.
Okay, very good. Very good. It seems to be one of those things that, like when we were touching on ground plane with vertical antennas, we know things that work with it. We don't have a specific formula. We don't quite understand it, but we know A, B, and C works. And I'm getting the feeling that's what this is, but some of these explanations are the valid reasons. So, all right, yeah, okay, I can live with that. Anybody else who has a different take on it, I'd like to hear it too. Thank you again, Roy.
You're welcome, John. Anyone want to comment on my comment and on John's comment?
With just a little experiment, maybe to thought experiment.
Sure, John. For some odd reason, your signal's a little weak right now. You're starting to have noise in the background.
I've had some wind damage on my antenna.
You're about 30-40% noise. I can follow you.
I'm going to have to come up here in the garage and take a look at the antenna. Just a little thought experiment. This is DC. Take a 10-volt DC battery. Put it in series with a 50-ohm resistor and then a variable resistor with that back to the battery. And see that resistor start at a short circuit and bring it up to 200 ohms, maybe going in 10 ohm steps, and get the voltage across it or current through it and find power.
John, there was someone transmitting in the background. I don't understand why they would do things like that. And then what I think I heard was a little a whistle from maybe even your radio that it probably was overheating or something. And then your signal stopped. So I'm thinking that maybe you got a mismatch into your antenna and a lot of reflected energy and strange things going on. You can tell me better than I can make up.
HK, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yes, John.
I caught the first half of what he said, and I found it very, very interesting. And what he said, and I hope I'm repeating it correctly, is that if you took a resistor and he gave a value to it and, put it in series with a 12-volt battery and then connected that resistor to a potentiometer and then went back to the battery, so you have a series circuit, I believe this is what he said, and then you measured went incrementally in different steps in the potentiometer, you would see a different power load across each one. And I lost the last, that's kind of where I lost them, but I really would like to hear the rest of it, but I'm going to just extrapolate on my own. I think what he was leading to is then at some point you would have an equal power over the two. I'm not sure. I wish I could have heard it all.
Can you copy me, Roy?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, what I was saying is that the power in that variable resistor will maximize when it's the same value as that other fixed resistor. That's the idea of the maximum power transfer when the load resistor matches the impedance of the source, the resistance of the source. You'll get maximum power. And you can do that just by varying the variable resistor in small steps and getting its power dissipated. You'll see at little peak when it matches the fixed resistor. And if you go higher or lower, the power will be less. Than that maximum value.
Okay, but in that case, you're not seeing any kind of reflection coefficient.
That's true, but still, it's the idea of maximum power transfer. Okay, the way that a power transfer works when you're dealing with transmission lines is that if you have the mismatch, the power gets reflected. But, I mean, the same concept of maximum power transfer applies in DC circuits as well.
Oh, okay. Well, but you can you really apply impedance to DC current? John, I don't know what's going on with the repeater these days.
HK, November 2, Zulu, John.
Yes, John?
Yeah, I see the validity in both of your explanations. And just what you were saying, can you really use, the Ohm's Law? Or rather, resistance and impedance. Well, you know, that's what we do with Ohm's Law, right? We replace R with C.
Yeah, but that's again for alternating current. In a direct current, inductive and capacitive reactance doesn't really do anything. It stabilizes after the initial connection of power.
Maybe I'm losing you here. If we take Ohm's Law and replace the R with a Z for the inductance and the capacitance, which would give us the definition of impedance, right? R impedance equals Z plus X plus C. Then we could extrapolate it. I mean, it works, right? And we use an RMS value with the AC.
Okay, let's say that you take a regular circuit, and DC circuit, switch, battery, wire, and you put a capacitor in series with it. Now you connect everything together, and the capacitor has reactance. It has infinite reactance at zero at DC. So I don't know, maybe if you factor in what happens with reactance at a cycle of zero, it works out. I don't know. I'd have to sit down and do the math. But I don't know. It just strikes me as kind of outside the range of what you would hope to use it for. But it may, on a theoretical basis, just factor everything correctly.
Okay, let me ask you this now. Going back to the other gentleman's example there, replacing that series circuit that he had with the battery and the fixed resistor and the potentiometer, if you had a sine wave generator there, and then you had an LC circuit, a fixed LC circuit, and then you had a variable LC circuit, and you tuned the variable LC circuit to the same reactance as the fixed LC circuit. Am I missing something, or would it still hold true? Would it mimic what we see in the DC circuit?
Could I respond, Roy?
Sure, please.
Yeah, let's say you have your AC source, and you have in series with it some resistance and some inductive reactance. Now you have a load which has some resistance and some capacitive reactance. When the capacitive reactance has the same magnitude as the inductive reactance, then you see all of those in series will cancel, and you're left with just the two resistance. So what I'm saying is that if you have complete control over the load, you will get maximum power to the load when its impedance, its resistance, and its reactance match the source's impedance, but with the opposite type of reactance. In other words, if the source has, say, 50 ohms and